155. The date is 26th of April, 1983. The place is room 124. The judiciary hearing room located in the capital of Juneau, Alaska. Items that issued before the committee today are House Bill 279, which is an act authorizing participation by magistrates in the judicial retirement system and providing for effective date. House Bill 6, which is an act relating to driving a motor vehicle. And HJR 34, which proposes amendment to the Constitution of the State of Alaska relating to election of prosecuting attorney. The committee also had HB 17, which is an act relating to sexual assault of a minor due to some drafting problems and some problems with the sponsor's interpretation of the legislation. And we're going to continue HB 17 to the first order of business on tomorrow's calendar. And at this time, deal with House Bill 279.
117, you mean?
Yeah, 117 will be continued, the first order of business on tomorrow's calendar. And we'll deal with 279 at this time, which is an act authorizing participation by magistrates in the judicial retirement system and providing for effective date. There are three people on a sign sheet to testify on this bill. I would remind the members of the committee that this committee held joint hearings on a statewide teleconference with the Senate Judiciary Committee. Representative Liska, Representative Malone, and Representative Barnes was there for part of the hearing. I don't believe Representative Lindy and Representative Clarkson made that hearing. It was a lengthy teleconference and took such stations, if I remember right, as Brett Allen, Fairbanks, Barrow, Anchorage. We may have even gone to the Keenan. I think we had one or two points in southeastern. With my report from what happened at that teleconference, it worked much to the committee members. There seemed to be general support to bill. It never was really clear to me why he was against the bill, but he was there against it. We'll take testimony from these three persons because they've signed today. I would remind the committee that this bill, this committee is interested in what legal implications this has, not so much whether everybody's for or against it. It has a large financial impact, which has to be dealt with in the Finance Committee. So, in having said that, there's a risk of being accused of limiting debate. I'm not going to do that, but I would remind the three witnesses that the calendar is heavy, and I'd like them to make their comments pointed if possible. And Mr. Ken Humphrey is Representative Clarkson.
Are any of the three people from NEA?
They just say Department of Administration, Department of Administration, APEA.
If I can ask, Mr. Chairman, I was not at that hearing. I'm reading the minutes of that meeting, which indicates that the member from APEA stated that his organizations were viewed, his organization's views were shared by the teachers' union, the NEA. Have we confirmed that, or?
Well, I don't know. They didn't testify. Just he's the only one that did.
I guess.
He's here to perhaps answer that. So, with that in mind, if Mr. Ken Humphries would come, and again, I'd like to stress to make the remarks pointed, if possible. Mr. Humphries, since we are recording electronically, I'll need you to say your name for the record prior to proceeding with your statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ken Humphries. I'm Director of the Division of Retirement Benefits, and I will try to make the remarks pointed and brief. Just very quickly rehash our position. The Department of Administration is opposed to this bill because there is a significant cost factor, and we don't believe that there is an offsetting public purpose. That is, that it will serve a need on the part of the citizens of Alaska who ultimately will have to pay for it. This in no way casts any aspersions on the magistrates themselves, that I'm willing to concede that they're very hard-working public servants, but I think there are also some out there. The judicial system is a very generous system. The only rationale for it that I'm familiar with is that it is required to get the highest quality, older, successful attorneys and get them into the judicial system. I do not think that rationale applies in the case of magistrates. If that could be demonstrated, perhaps our position would be different. That's really the gist of it, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I just have one. Mr. Humphries, are you saying the magistrates are not qualified and young and therefore not rendering a good legal service?
No, sir. I'm suggesting that they're already covered by a very adequate retirement system, that if we are not able to get qualified magistrates, that perhaps what we need to do is to increase their salary, that the rationale that a special retirement system is required for them in order to entice them into public service is not a valid one.
Representative Foxon?
I was not at the other hearing, Mr. Humphries, but does the large fiscal note take into account any reduction in necessary expenditures under the existing retirement system?
Yes.
I don't see how that...
Yeah, I believe that's figured on a sheet.
Yes, if I may, this would be, if I may, Mr.
Chairman.
Oh, I see. Go ahead.
This is the reduction in the PER, it's the 156.5.
Okay.
And the 781 is the gross cost in the judicial and the 625 is in there.
Thank you.
There are no further questions. Thank you, Mr. Humphries.
Thank you for being here. Mr. Chairman? I am on the Corrections Subcommittee, which is closing out now, on the Finance Committee. I will get back here as soon as possible because I'm interested in some of the other stuff coming up here. And what do you think I was abandoning?
I too was going to be there, but I can't be in two places at once.
I'll represent you as well.
And I know that you will represent me fully and all of the things that are necessary. Fortunately, I know Representative Adams is up there. Is it Robert and is it Stal Mazur?
Mr. Chairman, it's Stalnaker.
Stalnaker?
And I have nothing to add on here.
All right. Thank you much. And then is it Lee Powelson? And Lee is from the APA. Lee says, we are recording electronically. I need you to state your name prior to making a statement on the bill.
My name is Lee Powelson. I'm with the Alaska Public Employees Association. We testified at the earlier teleconference hearing in opposition to this bill because of its high cost, and we agree with the administration in their justification for opposition to it. Do you have any further questions?
Any questions in the committee, then, of late? If not, while you're here, I will say that we checked with the court administrator and the court system, and the court system has no opinion on this bill one way or the other. They are remaining neutral. And I think that's the only other user agency that we may want to talk to. Representative Whitney?
Reading the Senate Judiciary Committee minutes, you testified before that you're against it because there are other needs, including the cost of living adjustments for senior citizen benefits. What APEA has a position on senior citizen benefits?
That rationale was that if adjustments to the various retirement systems need to be made, that possibly one which would be more justified was an attempt to adjust the cost of living increases for those people who are in the current retirement system, rather than adding another group to this retirement system, which is particularly expensive for the persons involved.
Representative Barnes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't really have a question, but I do have a comment. It sounds like to me that the testimony we've got going was one of being awfully selfish. Thank you.
If there are no further questions, thank you, Mr. Bowson, for coming.
In response to Representative Foxon's earlier inquiry, the APEA and NEA sent a joint memo to the members of both the Senate and House Judiciary Committees regarding the bill when it was heard before at the teleconference.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
It was sent to members of both committees. We received a response from Representative Barnes regarding that, and so I'm sure she has a copy.
Thank you. Representative Barnes, I'm ready for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move and ask unanimous consent to House Bill number 279. An act authorizing participation by magistrates in the judicial retirement system and providing an effective date be moved from the committee.
Is there objection? There being none, House Bill 279, an act authorizing participation by magistrates in additional retirement system and providing for an effective date for leave from the committee. Next item before the committee is House Bill 6, which is a committee substitute for House Bill 6, Judiciary. Well, I guess we haven't adopted that committee, which is an act relating to driving a motor vehicle. Where did Gail go?
You think of 117?
No.
Well, what did Devin do?
Passenger had another draft. The chairman dispensed him and cleaned up.
She's going to do 10 minutes, or maybe we have to devote the time on that. Pamela Cook has gone back across the street, and Gail has gone upstairs for a few minutes, so let's defer on HB 6 and go to House Joint Resolution Number 34, proposing amendments to the Constitution of the State of Alaska. Did anyone sign to testify to that? I presume that's Gail, too. Then we could take for the record a statement of the sponsor. Any other whisper?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I can bet right here I'm under microphone, right? My name is John Liska, Representative of District 15, the prime sponsor of this particular piece of legislation, HJR 34. Proposing amendments to the Constitution of the State of Alaska relating to the election of the prosecuting attorneys. I don't think there's any doubt in anyone's mind that Alaska's citizens are showing a growing concern about crime in our state. There is a justifiable outcry for stronger law enforcement. It is our responsibility in this legislature to respond in every way we can to this concern. It is for this reason that I have introduced this joint resolution calling for the election of prosecuting attorneys. At the very root of effective law enforcement is a prosecuting attorney. The prosecutor's commitment to duty should reflect the best interest of the public he serves. To this end, it is our responsibility to see that this office conforms to the highest standards of dedicated, responsive, and independent accountability. It is my feeling that this can be best achieved when the prosecuting attorney is elected by the people he serves rather than appointed. Here are some of the reasons I support this concept. One, election by the people increases the likelihood that the prosecutor will be responsive to the law enforcement view of the community. It is by their authority the prosecutor acts, and it is to them he will be responsible. Two, an elected prosecutor possesses a degree of political independence that is important in an officer responsible for investigation and prosecution, especially in cases of bribery or corruption. Three, prosecutors are elected in 45 states, in 36 by constitutional provision, and in 9 by statute. Historical traditions show the importance of decentralizing the administration of criminal justice. 4, experience in large cities show that the elective process can produce dedicated career prosecutors who are highly professional and competent. What is important to realize is that passage of this joint resolution does not mean we will automatically elect prosecuting attorneys. Rather, it does allow the people to decide at the next general election. Therefore, I urge your unanimous support. Mr. Chairman, I would add that the Crime Commission, the Anchorage Crime Commission, is endorsing an election of Attorney General and District Attorneys under the 8-year sunset provision. So, during the campaign, my last campaign, I met many people who asked me how I felt about the election of the attorney generals and district attorneys, and several people. And my response to them was that I would look into it when I, if I was elected and got the legislature, at least give them a fighting chance to express their feelings at the polls. I have had myself one personal incident with the attorney, with the district attorneys in Anchorage, and that belonging to a corporation, had one of our corporation officers decide he wanted one of our vehicles for himself, so he just took it out and sold it. Put $3,100 in his pocket, and we tried to prosecute him under criminal prosecution. Anchorage Police Department on investigation said, well, there's just not enough evidence here. That the district attorney at that time, that would be Joe Balfe, and he said there wasn't enough evidence to perform criminal prosecution against this individual. So we ended up in civil court, and we realized $1,500 out of $3,100. So I felt myself, in the case as far as I'm concerned, that I wasn't getting full justification from the district attorney that if I had occasion to elect him myself, I think he would thought twice about it and go ahead and investigate or perhaps end up prosecuting. So I'd be willing to answer any questions that I can on this, but this is the reason why this particular piece of legislation has been introduced.
Is it your contention by implication, and the Crime Commission too, for that matter, that prosecutors are what, soft on crime, and they're not doing their job, and they're not upholding the law?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't know whether I could possibly answer you on this. As you know, we have similar pieces of legislation electing an attorney general. Now, under Alaska set up our constitution, that the attorney general is elected, is appointed by the governor, and in turn, the attorney general appoints the district attorney. So we got a continuation of the justice system. So, as you know, in this committee previously, we had quite a bit of testimony in regard to the attorney general as to pro and con for the election of attorney general. So here we have the prosecuting attorneys, which are the district attorneys, and if I recall right, there's 47 in the state of Alaska scattered throughout the state. This is just a continuation of, from the attorney general right on down through to his appointment to the district attorneys and prosecuting attorneys, and so we're right this baseline, and we're not gaining anything if this is what the will of the people wants. So, apparently, over a period of years, I've had quite a few comments from people that are definitely wanting comments to me. But they want an attorney general elected, they want a chance to elect him, and they want a district attorney elected, and they want a chance to elect him, and they also want a judge elected. So, this is a general feeling throughout the state when you talk to different people, not a core group of people, but general talking to the people when the subject comes up.
If I could continue, Mr. Chairman, I guess I didn't hear anything in there sort of a justification of why we need, you know, if they're not doing their job. I guess, you know, people who say they want to elect everybody, you know, they want to elect commissioners and directors, you know, probably would want to have a chance to get at anybody. But is the justification that they're not doing their job, or that Alaska isn't tough enough?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't believe I can answer that because I don't have that much affirmative information right now. That's definitely saying. We have anybody testifying for this bill or against it?
No one has signed the sheet.
So, as prime sponsor, you're not even aware that there's a need in terms of providing prosecution in the state and seeing that justice is done. You can't even testify to the fact there's a need for it other than people want to elect anything and everything that has to do with the justice system, the judges, the district attorneys, the prosecutors, the attorney general.
Well, it should be some indication that we have 45 states have elect attorney general or district attorneys today, there should be some indication there of why the other states go to this system, nine of them by statute. Apparently, they are quite a few individuals within a state that are not satisfied with the district attorney. Perhaps maybe they've been burnt along the line somewhere. They just don't like how they've been treated. I believe I could honestly say this. If you had an elected attorney general or a district attorney, you can go to that individual and get some response from him instead of being shunned out the door, can't make appointments with them because you're just immaterial to them. They're just another body. But if they know you're one of their constituents that's going to elect you, I think they could be quite a bit more responsive to your desires and for getting criminal justice.
So the first bill that passed this committee, dealing with election of attorney general, the concept there was, he's just not a guy that gives legal opinions to the governor and advises departments, but he has a whole department of law to run. That's just kind of the first step now. Now we're going to essentially dismantle the Department of Law, have everybody, all the DAs and prosecutors and everybody elected. And then you mentioned, I guess we want to elect judges as well, which I guess means throwing out any provision in the Constitution that has to do with the court system.
Well, Representative Wentley, I don't particularly want that myself. I'm just giving the people of the state of Alaska an opportunity to vote whether they want to do that or not. Let the people decide if they want to elect them. I'm just only one person, you're only one person. So if the people had the opportunity to vote at the polls whether they want to elect them, who do we serve? We serve the people.
In regard to dismantling the entire court system, from the attorney general to the prosecutors, the judges, I guess they had the opportunity in the last election to do that, to call for a constitutional convention, which they do every 10 years. And when you're talking about taking one branch of government and completely dismantling it or reshaping it, they had that option in November and chose not to do that, opening up the whole Constitution.
The Department of Law and the court system are two different pieces of government. It's not the Department of Law is in the executive branch of government, and the court system is in the branch of government. They're not in the same branch.
Okay, but I'm talking in terms of the provisions, whether you're electing the attorney general, everything we're talking about, and then he mentions electing judges as opposed to just reconfirming judges. I guess they had the option, the people, quote unquote, had that option in November and rejected what you're suggesting we do now.
Mr. Chairman, I'd respond to your comment about having the constitutional convention. We're getting a little bit off the subject here, but my feelings, I don't think we should have a constitutional convention. I think the Constitution of the State of Alaska is a good document, but it needs change. Just because the wheel doesn't squeak don't mean you have to put oil on once in a while. The people voted to not have a constitutional convention, but right here we're piecemealing it here now, different things. They want change within the Constitution. All this resolution does is give those individuals, the people of the State of Alaska, an opportunity to vote against it. So, that's all we can do, because we can't make law doing this here, because it has to go before the vote of the people. Election of the judges, this is not my idea. I hear these comments all the time in my district. I don't know how they are in your district, but I hear them all the time in the Yankees. Apparently, they're dissatisfied with some of the judges. I mean, they don't like appointments, for example. They want to elect them themselves. But this is the people.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I could add, I guess in the discussion of the Attorney General, we went into depth about DAs and how the whole system works, and nothing was mentioned. So yeah, I guess I agree with you totally. We are piecemeal. And I think when you're talking how we deal with justice in the state, it's important to look at the whole picture and not keep throwing out these resolutions for the voters to piecemeal it. I just hesitate, maybe in another 2 weeks we're going to have one to deal with judges, or maybe next year. So pretty soon, that's all they're going to have is a piecemeal pile of resolutions thrown at them in an election that could totally disrupt what I agree with you has been a pretty fine document in our Constitution today.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I could respond to that, have you heard of the Anchorage Crime Commission, Representative Winston?
Yes.
They're a pretty highly influential group of people that believe in law and order. Now, if they endorsed an election of attorney general and a district attorney, Me, myself, I listen to them. There's a reason for it. So that's why I was hoping we could get somebody here from the Hackensack Crime Commission to perhaps maybe testify one way or the other on this particular issue.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed that we have in our file holders here some material that was prepared under a Federal Law Enforcement Assistance Administration grant from the National District Attorneys Association. And in that, they do recommend the election of district attorneys or prosecuting attorneys. But looking over the material, Eric, I sort of have a question in that. One of the recommendations in there is that the job of prosecuting attorney should be approached as a career position. This is, but they go on to say that in that material that only 3% of the prosecutors that they talked to in Indiana, county prosecutors, intended to make a career of prosecution. And in Kentucky, that almost 45% of those people they talked to were interested in seeking out other political or governmental positions, utilizing the office of prosecutor as a stepping stone to higher office. That's on pages 11 and 12 of this report we have. And I guess a question I have is that if we have a elected prosecuting attorneys in the state, how do we ensure that, in fact, that we do get people who are interested in that as a career, if that's an important consideration? And I ask that question because it seems to me with our present system of having these people appointed within the Department of Law that there is a real opportunity for a career position and buildup of the knowledge and experience that's necessary for that special type of work. And I wonder if we're taking a risk here that we'd end up with 3% of the people that are holding the jobs interested in making a career out of it. That's a question I have.
Well, Mr. Chairman, may I, and it's not a Representative Malone, I would assume that if they're paid a living wage, that they probably would attempt to make a career out of it. And speaking of the state of Indiana, currently they're not paying them enough down there, and they end up being part-time district attorney. That's the only reason I can see for that.
No. Well, Mr. Chairman, that might be right. I haven't looked over the salary survey that they have in here as well. But the other question I guess I have on it, in House Joint Resolution number 34, I guess the question of the prime sponsor, this, as far as I can tell, contains no limitation on the number of terms that a person can hold the office. And Mike, is that something that we should consider in this legislation, in your opinion?
Salaries compared to what we pay here, not only in our legal services, but in the Department of Law's budget. I would say that comparing our salaries to theirs, we pay almost twice as much, it appears, in some cases. That if we wanted to hire more VAs, it seems like we could get the best in the country compared to, by comparing the salaries.
In an answer to your prior question about numbers and terms, it seemed to me like your prior comments were that you wanted to make this a career opportunity for these people. If you want a career opportunity on one hand and limit the terms on another one, they're inconsistent. You wouldn't want to, if you want career prosecutors, obviously you don't want to limit the terms. It's kind of the same as being affirmed again when they run against Representative Malone.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I think that's exactly the point, and that is that if we want to want to have these, you know, this responsive to the people, that we might also want to make sure that somebody doesn't get type a hold on a job where maybe they forget what the public interest is. We've discussed that in connection with legislators on, I think, on the grounds that maybe it shouldn't be a career thing. But I'm just raising that issue, I guess, and I agree they're inconsistent.
Now, Mr. Chairman, this is just a joint resolution that we go before the voters at the next general election for approval or disapproval. And I don't know, I would assume that if the people approve of this, then it would be up to the legislature to determine what terms or would have occasion to place a term on at the election. Maybe I'm right or not. I don't know.
Well, it seems to me this does set a term.
For a four-year term.
But I guess I would, in regard to the discussion on terms, I wouldn't think someone planning to make a career, if they have the mental capacity of the type of people I want prosecuting in the state, would plan to make a career of a job that they've got to go back and get elected, whatever the mood of the people were every 4 years, and that's how they're going to plan a career and the security for their family and all that's going to be based on it. I think Malone's original concern, apparently addressed in here as well, is clearly this going to be nothing but a political stepping stone.
There was a Whitney in 45 states and did just that.
I would note that most of the, if not all 49 other states, don't have a constitution, and the whole dealing with the justice system that is framed in ours, and ours is held up as being among the best, if not the best, as far as everything I've ever heard. And I think we've had testimony of that as well. On the other hand, if we want people to truly be responsive to the people, I would think you'd want them to go to the voters at least as often as a member of the House of Representatives does. If DAs and prosecutors aren't responsive to the current concerns of people in regard to crime.
Since this is a constitutional amendment, proposal for a constitutional amendment, and this is again just one step in a long road that this must rise above to become a change, it would be my view that we should move it. It's got to go all the way on through. It takes 27 votes to get it out of the House. It takes a like majority to get it out of the Senate. And of course, it takes a vote of the people before it can ever move anywhere. So I kind of view most of this stuff that way. This committee can't make this law, nor can it, in all likelihood, prevent it from becoming if that's what the people want. But I guess that's the only option it has, is to prevent it from becoming law, even if that's what the people want. I accept the motion at this time to move this piece of legislation along as we're out. Representative Hayes?
Thank you, Chairman. I move and ask unanimous consent that House Joint Resolution 34 be moved from the Judiciary Committee with individual recommendations.
Is there objection?
Objection.
There is objection. Representative Malone?
No. Mr. Chairman, we are dealing with a constitutional amendment here, a substantial rewrite of a portion of the last constitution. If the support, the great popular support that the crime sponsor mentions, in fact does exist among the Alaska population for this type of reorganization or approach to state government, seems to me that we ought to hear from people on that. I'm not assured, in fact, that support exists. I don't doubt Mr. Liska's word, but I would like to hear from myself on that. And people may have recommended changes for this language proposed to be written into the Constitution. Some issues, I think, have been sort of lightly discussed here in committee, but I don't think the way to rewrite the Alaska Constitution is to drop in a bill and run it through without full hearings on it. I think that changes to the Alaska Constitution, the basic charter of government in Alaska, should be approached by the legislature and any committee of the legislature with more gravity, not less, than some minor change in the criminal code. And because it's something that affects a very basic relationship between the people and their government. And I firmly believe if people think this resolution is something that should go on the ballot, I think we also ought to subject it to hearings for the purpose of seeing, first of all, what the comments are that people have on it, the ideas for possible amendments. I don't think we should lightly pass it in committee, and that's the basis of my objection.
I guess I would concur for basically the same reason. I don't take a change in the Constitution or the role of this committee or the legislature in considering changes in the Constitution as lightly, maybe as your statement indicated. And if the impact that this would have, I think, requires a thorough review of particularly the impact as opposed to just who supports it. Essentially what we're doing is talking with the same level of discussion a matter to what the injury, what the penalties are for injuring a dog as we are for changing the Constitution of this state. And I suggest, Mr. Chairman, that it's a little more weighty matter for this committee to consider.
Well, let me suggest to you that this gets subjected to a little more review than something about a dog. This takes a different majority of votes to move anywhere than any other piece of legislation. And I hope neither one of you are suggesting that anybody at this committee takes their vote lightly. I don't vote, nor do I put my name on something to move or not to move something without some gravity of thought. And I know that neither one of you are suggesting that, nor of other committee members.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only thing comment I have to the objections is what any member of this committee would have by placing a piece of legislation this type before the voters of the state and let them decide. And that's all this resolution does. Let the voters decide.
Well, we've heard that several times this year, and I guess I obviously wasn't here for the extensive testimony on this, so I may have missed some of it, but fact is, as we've said several times before, this isn't going to be on the ballot for another year and a half anyway. No way it is, so I don't understand why we need to be in such a hurry. And if you're correct that the people are going to vote on it, they aren't going to vote on it until after next legislative session.
Chairman? Representative Fox, and they're not going to vote on this unless we give them an opportunity to vote on it. This particular piece of legislation and election of Attorney General. There's nobody going to vote on this until they're given an opportunity to vote. And that's all we're requesting now, is give the people an opportunity to vote on a type of legislation.
Representative Winty, and then Representative Malone.
Addressing the question whether to move it out from committee, I would respond to the extent, I think, by the very fact that this committee has to consider this. The very fact that the legislature has to consider this before it goes to the voter indicates there's a responsibility we have to judge what the impact of it would be. And that's why I would hope that we consider it a little more thoroughly. In terms of consideration on a vote, whether it takes 27 or 21, I think the indications on those who defend the committee system as strongly as some of us do is that we are going to be asked on the floor to document what the impact is, and I don't think we have any testimony or any information to give them of what the impact is, except that we're giving the people an opportunity to vote on something and piecemeal our criminal justice system. And I would hope that the committee, in response to its responsibilities of the committee system, can develop that information for them.
Mr. Chairman, on the motion. I can think of a lot of things or changes that from time to time seem desirable to me in the Alaska Constitution. I rarely put in resolutions to amend the Constitution, even though some parts of it annoy me. But if I did do that, I would expect that the committees of the legislature, in considering a possible amendment to the Constitution, would look at what issues are involved in it. In this bill, for example, we have a number of issues, to name a few. the duties of these prosecuting attorneys. Well, apparently we're leaving that up to the law, to the legislature in the future, and that might be an appropriate way of doing it, but we may want to limit these things to criminal law. We may want to describe the duties more carefully. The size of the districts, as near as I can tell, unless I'm wrong here, we're talking about the using for election districts the current judicial districts in the state. Well, what that means is that when people are voting on prosecuting attorneys, they have just the same problem almost they have now in voting on judges, in that in the region of the state that where I come from, the 3rd Judicial District, we have most of the state's population, and it seems to me that the accountability there in that case wouldn't even meet the purpose of this bill. If we're voting on a prosecuting attorney maybe that would be in charge of that district, I guess, in Anchorage, currently at least on the peninsula, we have a local prosecuting attorney. So that's an issue, the size of the district and how accountable you want to make it. Question of whether we want a partisan or nonpartisan ballot. I mean, it's in the bill nonpartisan, but I think I could raise some good arguments to argue for a partisan ballot. And some others that we've discussed a little bit, what should be the length of term? Do we want it to be 4 years? Do we want it to be 2? Do we want it to be 6? Do we want a limit on the length of term? Those are all issues that really should be examined, at least in some depth, before passing this bill on to the floor of the House. And so, again, I maintain my objection, because whether or not the basic concept of it's a good idea, and I admit that my first reaction is it's not, but I do think there are issues in it that we should try to do justice to before recommending something to the House. So that's my argument. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, to answer Representative Malone's question there, this is a nonpartisan ballot. On the line 29, then line 1 of 29 of the second page and line 1 of the third page.
On the motion, Representative Barnes.
Mr. Chairman, if we're through the discussion, I ask you the question.
Yes, I was going on the motion.
Yes.
Representative Wente?
No.
Representative Foxon?
No.
Representative Malone?
No.
Representative Hayes?
Yes.
Representative Liskin?
Yes.
And I will vote yes if the 4-3 the vote is to move HDR 34, opposing members to the Constitution, say Alaska, related to election and prosecuting attorney from the committee with individual recommendations. Representative Foxon?
Can I just ask a question? Did you rule on the motion?
I beg your pardon?
Did you rule on the motion? Have we moved the bill?
Yes.
I just had a question. I'm sorry again that I had to step out. I have a letter in my file that indicates that an organization called Alaska Action Trust sent a letter asking to be notified of hearings on this bill. My note indicates that my staff called your staff to make sure that they would be notified. This is back on March 28th. Do you know if they were notified of this hearing?
I don't have such a letter.
I think I did talk to the lady at the end. I can't remember her name now. I didn't make a request, did I?
Right. I had promised them that we'd be sure they got notified, but I don't know what they did.
Mr. Chairman, in that letter, they asked to be notified on a whole.
Likely to be lengthy. And Gail has an appointment at 3 o'clock, is that right? At this time, the committee would like to consider HB6, which is an act relating to operating a motor vehicle and camera. If we continue to a later date, can you come, or a later hour,
can
you come back? So Gail, at this time, if you can get started with as much of you as we can before we, and it's my intention to continue this bill to whatever hour, or at least later in the day, to continue to get testimony on this lengthy draft. What would be the best hour for the committee if I chose 6 or 7 o'clock tonight to go for another couple of hours? Representative Cox.
Let me ask your intent first. I've just had a chance to review this very briefly, and there are several new things in there. Are you intending to move it tonight? Or? Well,
what I'm intending to do is to see just how complicated these become for the committee. Council has went through it, and actually after an analysis of it, we don't think it's as complicated as it appears. I'll try to judge that by how many questions or what the committee does as to how clear it becomes to it. And if I judge along the line someplace that it does, why I'll try to ask to have the bill moved. If it's obviously too complicated for us, and a lot of changes come about, well, we'll try to switch around and do something different. But is a 6 o'clock continued time better than a 7 for the committee?
I think so.
6?
I won't. I can't make it. You said you can't make either one.
We might have lucked out there.
Should have kept my mouth shut. I can come anytime.
Ramona's got to go with you then.
All right, Mr. Chairman, I have at least two other commitments between about 6 and 8 o'clock. I can come in and out to get the testimony.
Yeah, well, you know, I'd like to. I have 3 resources, four or five, I can't remember, fisheries, and I'm generally done there by 6 o'clock and, from fisheries. And if it doesn't cause a great deal of inconvenience to everybody, I'd like to crank back up at 6 o'clock and go from 6 to 8. Those hours would be better for me, or 6 to 8 to 9, whatever we think we want to do. And I'd like to let progress dictate that.
I mentioned that I do have a teleconference tonight, 6:45 to 7:45, which I'll run for half of them to come back.
Left out again. So,
bless your heart, Mr. Chairman.
Maybe 6 o'clock then would be agreeable to the most of the committee members, Representative
Hayes. I assume then you're just going to recess so that once a quorum is established, we don't all need to be here at any one time.
That's correct. However, this is an important bill, and I'd urge those of you that could to be here as much as possible. I don't know how well you've had your staff go through this. Maybe you've got it sure enough going on. So with that said, Gail, since we are recording electronically, I need you to state your name for the record prior to making your statement on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Gail Horetsky. I'm an Assistant Attorney General. I work for the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. Let me give you a little bit of background on at least this most recent version of the bill. As far as I know, there have been 3, maybe 4 versions. There was a version that was passed from the House State Affairs Committee, I understand it, and that's the one that came over here. At the request of the sponsor of the bill, the prime sponsor, Representative Abood, I took that version and made some comments and some suggestions about some changes which should be made. Some of those suggestions were incorporated and result in some of the different shape of the bill that you have in front of you. Others were not incorporated, some of which I think were important and should have been, and I'll just alert the committee to them. Just for the committee's information in terms of questioning, the version I have now, which I think is the most recent one, it says Cook 425 on the upper right-hand corner. I don't think I have one more recent than that.
No, it's Cook 425, and the fiscal note, fiscal information we have matches that
version.
That particular version. We probably should pin those together.
That's why the chairman doesn't want to continue tomorrow, because we might have another version.
That's right. It kind of keeps going on and on here.
Well, what I started to say is that there are 2 sections of that bill that I have really had not had an opportunity to review at any length, and that's Sections 8 and Sections 13. Section 8 is the one that makes the presumptive level 0.08. Section 13 is the one that empowers law enforcement people to use what is called a PBT, preliminary breath test. PBT is the initials that is shorthand. Both of those sections are new in this draft of the bill, and as far as I know, we're not in previous versions.
Representative Clarkson?
Excuse me, Section 8.
Section 8. It's on page 7 of the draft.
No, I'm sorry. Let me see which one it is. Section 11 is new, and Section 13. I'm sorry, sir.
11
and 13. Both of those are new. Since we only have about I only have about 15 minutes, and I know.
Maybe you didn't get it.
What did you get?
I need a copy of the
draft. You don't have that
version?
I have it.
No. I don't know.
I don't have one either.
$425.
These things have been handed out to all of you.
You got one?
I'm sorry, while we're getting organized, are you saying that you're not prepared to testify on 11 and 13?
Basically, yes. I'm sorry, I only got those yesterday, so I don't have time.
Well, they're easy to do. I'll tell you a little bit about what they are. Eight involves a new kind of driver's license.
That was central office. No, we're talking about 11.
Talking about 11, that was my mistake.
The BAC.
Eleven is just decreasing the amount of, or the, whatever the dial points to when you bring it into a machine from what it is now to back to .08. That's what it does. And 13, you have a bill analysis in there too, incidentally, that goes with this thing. Put together by Tamara Cook, which will quickly explain what those are for you. Go ahead, Gail.
Okay. Since I know, Mr. Chairman, that you have another meeting at 3, I'm going to try to make as much comments as I can in 12 minutes, which you guys know I'm long-winded, so I apologize in advance. Let me just point out to you what I see as some of the potential problems with this version of the work draft, and then what you do with it is up to you, obviously. First, there are two sections of the statutes which conflict with some of the provisions in here, which should be changed in a sort of a housekeeping manner, not substantively so much as putting in words that allow our changes to take place. For example, the last section of this bill, second to last, it's well, it's on page 15, and it's entitled Section 2835038. I guess it's Section 19 of the bill. It talks about municipal impoundment and forfeiture, and says a municipality may adopt ordinance which need not be consistent. That's basically to allow Anchorage's present ordinance to remain in effect. Anchorage has an ordinance which covers impoundment as well as forfeiture, and this bill only deals with forfeiture. However, there is a contrary provision in Title 28, 28.01.010, which says no municipality may enact an ordinance which is inconsistent with this title.
What's it say?
28.01.010. So I would suggest language somewhat along the lines of, unless specifically authorized in this title, comma, no municipality may enact an ordinance. There's also another section, 28.05.051, which allows the Department of Public Safety and peace officers to take licenses away from people, but it doesn't allow judges or employees of the court specifically. And since in this bill we are talking about the court taking a license away if it hasn't yet been taken, I suggest an amendment to that section as well, because right now they contradict each other.
What section of the bill is that?
It's 28.05.051B.
Revenue bond?
No, that's a law. What's the bill?
Yeah. I'm just trying to, on that point, that's the existing law. What's the portion of the bill that that's in the
okay.
System?
There are a couple of sections. One is section 15166, court review of revocation, that says the court shall take the license if it has not yet been surrendered. And
I'm sorry, where are you?
On page 3, 2815-166, the lines 14 and 15. And there's a, it's a little later on. Here's,
Somebody, Barnes?
Gail, I have a question to you.
Yes, ma'am.
I understood that one of the reasons why there was a hold up on this bill, that it was being worked on by the Department of Law. Is this not the Department of Law's bill?
No, ma'am, it's not. Okay. As I said, I made, well, pages and pages of suggestions, some of which were incorporated and some of which were not. I'm only bringing to the committee's attention those that I think are important enough that you ought to know about them if you're going to pass a bill that is consistent.
Oh, I appreciate that. It was just that I was really curious as to what's going on here.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gail, on you say on 051 that authorized a law enforcement officer to take the driver's license?
that's a general provision in the law right now which says either the police officer or the commissioner may take them. Doesn't say under what circumstances. It
that's
just,
what I meant.
Yes.
You don't recall what circumstances they have authority to take that license?
Well, right now it's not specified in the statute, except if a person is suspended, for example, for points, you know, he gets too many points, then the public safety sends him a letter, and then he's got to mail his license back. And
12 points.
A whole bunch of areas where you have to surrender your license. And that's what this is for. Again, just hitting the highlights of them, the problems I see. On page 3, lines 7 through 9, talk about the period of revocation of the driver's license shall be determined under 2815-181. Well, if you cross-reference to 181, current version of 181 says court suspensions, revocations, and limitations. And the language under there talks about when the court suspends, when the court suspends. So there ought to be some specific language either that amends 181 that says court suspension or administrative suspension, or there ought to be some language in D that says, notwithstanding the fact that that other section refers to court suspensions, we also mean to incorporate it here. How you do it, I don't think, is as important as the fact that you want to make it clear that 181C, although on its face doesn't appear to apply, you mean its provisions to apply in this circumstance. The one serious due process flaw I see in the current version of this bill is that it allows a person, how it works is, a person is arrested for drunk driving. He's asked to take a breathalyzer. There are two circumstances. Either he refuses the breathalyzer or he blows 1.0 or above. It'd be 0.8 in this one, but 1.0 or above under current law. If either of those circumstances are present, the cop physically takes his license, gives him a temporary license, and says that's good for 7 days. Under the version of the bill right now, if the man files within 7 days, the person, his revocation is stayed and he can have a court hearing, not necessarily within 7 days, but soon, and he's got to file within 7 days. The way it's written right now, if he doesn't file within 7 days, unless he was actually locked up or in the hospital or something, there's an incapacitation section. Except for those circumstances, if he doesn't do it within 7 days, he's lost all his rights to challenge it. So, for example, just to pick a situation. If a person, his brother was arrested for DWI or for refusal and gave the wrong name, and then a person's license was revoked, and he or she didn't find out about it until like a month later or 2 weeks later, under the current version of the bill, there's no place where they could go in and say, listen, I just found out about this. My name is Jack Jones, and that's not me whose license you suspended. You suspended the wrong person's license. Right now, there's no place to go for that. I think that there are due process challenges that can be made on that system because you might have innocent people losing their licenses with no recourse. And I also think that our court has favored appellate review of administrative determinations, especially of a valuable piece of property such as a license. So I would suggest that current 166 be amended in some form or an additional section be added to allow for appellate review of the determination to revoke the license. This is so we can survive a due process challenge in the appellate courts. You could write it any way you wanted to. You could put in, for example, if he doesn't file within 7 days, the license revocation goes into effect. He can still go to a court and have a hearing, but it doesn't stay his revocation, for example. You could maybe do it that way so that it continues suspended until he gets it reversed, but at least he's got a place to go. At least there's a forum for his complaints to be heard. So that's my suggestion on that section. On section 4, which is on page 5, begins, let me tell you, the situation under current law is that drunk driving convictions are, for license suspension purposes, treated under one subsection of the statute, and everything else is treated under another. Everything else is like manslaughter, felony using a motor vehicle, perjury in a connection with a application for title, several offenses, manslaughter, that you can get your license suspended for. Under current law, they don't, for want of a better term, mix and match. In other words, you were convicted for drunk driving 2 years ago. Your license was suspended for 30 days. Now, tomorrow, you get in an accident, whether you're drinking or not, you get in an accident and you kill somebody and you are adjudged guilty of negligent homicide. You are sentenced for license purposes as a first offender for the negligent harm because DWI doesn't count as a first offense for a second in this other category. I hope you follow me. They've sorted out drunk driving in one section and the others are all Now, I recommended that they be put back together so they mix and match. You can maybe put higher penalties for DWI if you want to, but it seems to me that if you've had a prior reckless or a prior manslaughter, and then you get stopped for drunk driving, you ought to be a second offender for license purposes. And that used to be the situation in Title 28 until the most recent amendments last session, which made it stiffer for drunk driving, which pulled it out of the general provision, so you lost your mix and match. This section, I have a version drafted which puts them back together so that they all count as priors for each other. That was one of the ones that wasn't adopted. So this one keeps them separate. And it's not a crucial thing. I just want you to be aware it's kind of anomalous that you can have an negligent homicide but still be a first offender for DWI because of the way the statute's written.
I haven't obviously seen your language, but do you support a total mix and match? That is, any earlier violation would trigger a second violation? You gave the hypothetical of the drunk driving over 2 years ago, and would that be an example?
Well,
would you mix and match all of it? That's the question.
Mr. Chairman.
The next time you do that, too.
Okay.
Mr.
Chairman, can I respond? I would list only the ones that are currently in the statute, which are seven, and then plus this bill adds an eighth one, which is refusal. There are only seven. It's manslaughter, felony using a motor vehicle.
Where are you looking?
Bottom of page 4, section 3 of the bill. Okay, that.
Section 3 is in the
bill? Yeah. Section 3 of the bill. On page 4. Those are the ones that are already listed. I'm not advocating adding to them other than 8, which is the refusal. Just so you're aware that the mix and match provision is gone. Page 6 of your bill, section 181, this is where we get to the problem I mentioned earlier. It deals only with the court revoking license. It doesn't talk about administrative. Section 6 of the bill, on the bottom of page 6. Okay. Page 7, section 8. We have a problem under current law in that if a person's license is revoked and then they're given a limited license, the way this section, 201C, has been interpreted by the courts, his limitation continues until he gets a new license. In other words, the court says, I revoke your license for 90 days. Okay, the court says, I give you a limited license, you can drive to and from work 8 to 5 in the morning, or 8 to 9 in the morning and in the evening. Okay, how that section has been interpreted is at the end of this 90 days, instead of going into a revoked status where the guy has to get insurance or pay financial responsibility, that 90-day suspension continues until the guy gets a new license. So he continues to drive under those requirements, but he also hasn't got a revoked license. So he can drive for like 2 years or 5 years, however long, until he gets his new license, because it expires, under the original limited license, which was only supposed to be for 90 days. And he doesn't have to go through any of the revocation procedures that most people have to go through. And this is right now the section that's applied to almost all first offender drunk drivers, because they almost all get limited licenses. So what I would suggest doing is, in this one, say, after determination of the limitation as shown on the certificate issued under B, the license of a person on whom a limitation was imposed is revoked until the person complies with 28.20.240, which is the revocation section, which says in order to get your license back, you have to do these things. That's a policy issue. Section 11, as I say, is new. I would just like to say in passing that you're absolutely correct, Mr. Chairman, as to what it does. At the time 1.0 was adopted as the presumptive limit, there were long, long hours of testimony about when are people impaired and how much drink over what period of time and how many percentage of people are influenced. And I would just alert the committee to the fact that if we're going to lower the presumptive level, I guarantee you we're going to get defense challenges to the rationality of the new level, and I would strongly urge the committee to have some kind of evidentiary hearings where you have doctors testify or somebody, so that I, whoever defends the statute, can point to the fact that you made a rational relationship based on the medical information before you and blah, blah, blah. It's a big change, and it ought to be, we ought to be able to defend it.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Winston?
I've tended
a lot of sessions on this bill. I have not attended all. Have we had any testimony on this section, or is this something that's just thrown in by
draft? You're looking at something brand new, totally. Same way the rest of the side. Yeah.
Let me just comment that, in fact, the only reference we've had to that is the fact that there has been a substantial amount of testimony that most of the problem drunk drivers are people that have very high BACs.
Two, three.
So I'm real curious to hear how this, where this came from.
In the interest of time, it's at 3 o'clock, and I had earlier said it was my pleasure to extend it. It is not my pleasure, after getting into it this far, to extend this thing. I think, I won't really tell you what I think right now.
I'd love to hear it, Mr. Chairman.
Well, you know my feelings about this bill starting. I'd have to swallow hard over a lot of it anyway. But I'm willing to swallow hard, but it's got to be with some degree of regularity. And I don't have it here right now. It would be my decision right now to continue this bill. But where's my weekly calendar? Today is Tuesday. At least until Friday. And we'll reschedule this bill on Friday. And between now and then, continue to define the direction that the sponsor wants to go with this bill, because I'm not sure what it is right now. So if there's nothing further to come before this, Representative Foxon?
You can adjourn. I just wanted, while I was gone, I want to figure out which bills you move so I can take those files with me. You can adjourn the committee.
We continued 117 until tomorrow. We had a drafting problem, and it's the first order of business till tomorrow. 279 was moved to finance. Its implications are financial. HJR 34 moved from the committee, and 6 got continued. I should probably make one other announcement. I guess I can do it all the same time, but 293 was continued earlier until Thursday. The Representative Ward informs me we'll be back until 10 o'clock Friday morning, so we need to continue 239 until Friday also.
What's the bill again?
Or 293, forgive me. It was a bill Monday, and we couldn't do anything because the prime sponsor, Representative Ward, wasn't here. And he's now tells me he'll return at 10 Friday. So we need to, we had continued it till Thursday. We need to continue it till Friday too.
293. Right.
Yeah, 293. It's an act related to definition of terms of agency in the ombudsman.
Oh, right.
So if there's nothing further to come before this committee at this time, we'll return till 1:30 tomorrow.